Hello, this is Dee reading the Vermilion County News for November 9th. We'll begin our reading with the front page article entitled Biden Wins the White House, Vowing New Direction for the Divided U.S. This is from the Associated Press, Washington. Democrat Joe Biden defeated President Donald Trump to become the 46th President of the United States on Saturday, positioning himself to lead a nation gripped by historic pandemic and a confluence of economic and social turmoil. His victory came after more than 3 days of uncertainty as election officials sorted through a surge of mail-in votes that delayed the processing of some ballots. Biden crossed 270 Electoral College votes with a win in Pennsylvania. Biden, 77, staked his candidacy less on any distinctive political ideology than on galvanizing a broad coalition of voters around the notion that Trump posed an existential threat to American democracy. The strategy proved effective, resulting in pivotal victories in Michigan and Wisconsin, as well as Pennsylvania, one-time Democratic bastions that had flipped to Trump in 2016. Biden was on track to win the national popular vote by more than 4 million, a margin that could grow as ballots continue to be counted. Trump seized on delays in processing the vote in some states to falsely allege voter fraud and argue that his rival was trying to seize power, an extraordinary charge by a sitting president trying to sow doubt about a bedrock democratic process. As the vote count played out, Biden tried to ease tensions and project an image of presidential leadership, hitting notes of unity that were seemingly aimed at cooling the temperature of a heated, divided nation. Quote, "We have to remember the purpose of our politics isn't total, unrelenting, unending warfare," end quote, from Biden on Friday night in Delaware. "No, the purpose of our politics, the work of our nation, isn't to fan the flames of conflict, but to solve problems, to guarantee justice, give everybody a fair shot." Kamala Harris also made history as the first black woman to become vice president, an achievement that comes as the U.S. faces a reckoning on racial justice. The California senator, who was also the first person of South Asian descent elected to the vice presidency, will become the highest-ranking woman ever to serve in government 4 years after Trump defeated Hillary Clinton. Trump is the first incumbent president to lose re-election since Republican George H.W. Bush in 1992. It was unclear whether Trump would publicly concede. Americans showed deep interest in the presidential race. A record 103 million voted early this year, opting to avoid waiting in long lines at polling stations during a pandemic. With counting continuing in some states, Biden had already received more than 74 million votes, more than any presidential candidate before him. More than 236,000 Americans have died during the coronavirus pandemic. Nearly 10 million have been infected, and millions of jobs have been lost. The final days of the campaign played out against the backdrop of a surge in confirmed cases in nearly every state, including battlegrounds such as Wisconsin, that swung to Biden. The pandemic will soon be Biden's to tame, and he campaigned pledging a big government response akin to what Franklin D. Roosevelt oversaw with the New Deal during the Depression of the 1930s. But Senate Republicans fought back several Democratic challengers and looked to retain a fragile majority that could serve as a check on such Biden ambition. The 2020 campaign was a referendum on Trump's handling of the pandemic, which has shuttered schools across the nation, disrupted businesses, and raised questions about the feasibility of family gatherings heading into the holidays. The fast spread of the coronavirus transformed political rallies from standard campaign fare to gatherings that were potential public health emergencies. It also contributed to an unprecedented shift to voting early and by mail, and prompted Biden to dramatically scale back his travel and events to comply with restrictions. Trump defied calls for caution and ultimately contracted the disease himself. He was saddled throughout the year by negative assessments from the public of his handling of the pandemic. Biden also drew a sharp contrast to Trump through a summer of unrest over the police killings of Black Americans, including Breonna Taylor in Kentucky and George Floyd in Minneapolis. Their deaths sparked the largest racial protest movement since the Civil Rights era. Biden responded by acknowledging the racism that pervades American life, while Trump emphasized his support of police and pivoted to a law and order message that resonated with his largely white base. The president's most ardent backers never wavered and may remain loyal to him and his supporters in Congress after Trump has departed the White House. The third president to be impeached, though acquitted in the Senate, Trump will leave office having left an indelible imprint in a tenure defined by the shattering of White House norms and a day-to-day whirlwind of turnover, partisan divide, and the ever-present threat via his Twitter account. Biden, born in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and raised in Delaware, was one of the youngest candidates ever elected to the Senate. Before he took office, his wife and daughter were killed, and his two sons badly injured in a 1972 crash. Commuting every night on a train from Washington back to Wilmington, Biden fashioned an everyman political persona to go along with powerful Senate positions, including chairman of the Senate, Judiciary, and Foreign Relations Committees. Some aspects of his record drew critical scrutiny from fellow Democrats, including his support for the 1994 crime bill, his vote for the 2003 Iraq War, and his management of the Clarence Thomas Supreme Court hearings. Biden's 1988 presidential campaign was done in by plagiarism allegations, and his next bid in 2008 ended quietly. But later this year, he was tapped to be Barack Obama's running mate, and he became an influential vice president, steering the administration outreach to both Capitol Hill and Iraq. While his reputation was burnished by his time in office and his deep friendship with Obama, Biden stood aside for Clinton and opted not to run in 2016 after his adult son Beau died of brain cancer the year before. Trump's tenure pushed Biden to make one more run as he declared that the very soul of the nation is at stake. Our next front page article is entitled Veterans Day 5K Supports Veterans and Legion by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. This is the fourth year for the Veterans Day 5K, which has raised more than $15,000 to support American Legion Post 210. The money has helped with improvements to the Legion. They have put in new flooring and redone the bathrooms, plus put in a handicapped accessible bathroom, according to organizer Lisa Knapp. The donations have helped them to continue to support our veterans. This year's 5K will start at 11 a.m. Saturday at the American Legion Post 210 on Jackson Street in Danville. It started on Saturday. Online registration was already closed. Knapp said people can do a 5K virtually and still donate $20. There was free chili for participants in the Legion parking lot after the race. They were also accepting any donation amounts for the Legion. Our next article is entitled Preparations, Toys for Tots Expects Additional Need by Jennifer Bailey. In 2019, the Vermilion County Toys for Tots program supported 1,698 children and distributed 7,528 toys. This year, with the coronavirus pandemic, more people unemployed and more families struggling financially, the program is expected to see more of a need. "We're trying to prepare for a minimum of 2,000 children," said coordinator Megan Montgomery. "If need be, we will figure out a way to get more toys and monetary donations. Right now, I'm trying to make sure we have enough." The program, operated by volunteers, is through the Marine Corps League in Danville. They collect new and unwrapped toys, as well as donations to purchase toys that go to children in Vermilion County and also Fountain and Warren counties in Indiana. Sign-ups for families in Danville have already started at the Salvation Army, 855 East Fairchild Street. Hours are 9:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Mondays and Thursdays, and 9:30 to 11 a.m. on Tuesdays through November 24th. Sign-ups in Indiana, 3 to 6 p.m. November 9th at West Lebanon Public Library, 200 North High Street, West Lebanon, and 1 to 4 p.m. November 10th at Attica Public Library, 305 South Perry Street, Attica. Photo identification, proof of everyone in the household with dates of birth, proof of income, all monthly bills, and proof of residency are needed. Children must be signed up by their parent or legal guardian. No adult will be allowed to register a child for whom they are not parent or legal guardian. Toys for Tots will be serving children from birth through age 14 this year. In the first 2 days this week, the Salvation Army signed up about 70 children in Danville, according to Montgomery. Montgomery said they know a lot of people want to sign up online, but due to the verification process and limited program volunteers, they can't. This year, there are some other changes with the program. "We are changing it a little bit," Montgomery said. "It has always been a one-day distribution in the past. This year, we'll see a two-day distribution of toys to families in Danville." "We are expecting more families to need help," Montgomery said. "To handle the unexpected increase in families and deal with coronavirus capacity restrictions, they will limit the number of family members they can have at distribution each day." She said the volunteers plan to spread out the tables of toys and items as much as they can to not have so many people close together. Montgomery said they also will not be able to let people sit inside and wait. Family members will have to wait outside. "We can't take that risk. We're trying to be cautious," she said. Toy donation boxes are already placed at businesses throughout the area, with more expected to be set out. "We're still having businesses ask for them," Montgomery said. Locations include Dollar General, which is a national sponsor, with all the local stores having boxes in addition to Family Dollar. A lot of bars and restaurants have even agreed to take cash donation boxes. Montgomery added that's the first time the cash donation boxes have been in the community. She said that this is a way to do something to come up with more donations. Montgomery said about every small town in Vermilion County has at least one donation box or monetary box or jar with businesses that can take them. Those who want to support the program can also go to the Vermilion County Toys for Tots website at danville-il.toysfortots.org. There are links to donate online, sign up to volunteer, become a toy drop-off site, and find drop-off sites. "It will stay with us," Montgomery said, "of the financial donations staying local." She said they also have an Amazon.com wish list for toys, electronics, and other items that people can purchase off of Amazon. The toys will be shipped directly to the local program. Links for the different children age groups can be found on the local Toys for Tots website. "It's just easy peasy," she said. A toy drive partnering with WCIA also is tentatively planned for December 10th at Carl. "You can just see it. People are struggling and people are not doing well." She said, "We just want to make sure kids have a good Christmas." Our next article is entitled "DAC Students Named to NJCAAE Committees" by Marvin Holman. Danville. Esports at the college level is rising, and two Danville area community college students have been tapped to continue that emergence. Michael Guido Estevez and Colin Shaner were named to special committees for the NJCAAE, the national governing body of two-year college esports, which is defined as sports competition using video games. Colin is on the rules committee, and he will help tell people about the rules of the games and help them play it the right way and rules disputes, Estevez said. My committee is recruitment and membership. What we do is promote tournaments, help schools set things up, tell them what it will cost to get started, and why they should do it. I like to show to other schools how to get started instead of going through a lot of research to start, like starting myself. It's nice because on a national level, we get to set the future of esports in community colleges. Shaner explained further. We just recently established who will be in it and what we are doing. Basically, it will be a group of people who have a passion for gaming that know what they're talking about as far as setting up the grounds that sportsmanship and competitive integrity is met at a major level. He said, we have debates on which rules can be used for competitive integrity and what can be kicked out. It has been an open source discussion, and we've been able to solve a lot of problems. The new spots continue the evolution of the sport and the evolution of the DAC team, which plays and practices in a lab that opened earlier this year. DAC has been on the forefront by getting our lab and giving us what we needed to set things up. From the president down, there's been full support, Estevez said. When we came to the board with the idea, few members didn't get it. But when I explained it to them, they said, this is great. It's been easy on my end, and I haven't had to fight to get what I need. The lab opened in March, a week before the COVID-19 pandemic started, but the action still continued. We used to host tournaments, and we had 20 to 40 people in person, and then it grew to 175 online. So it showed the power of esports. But also, people didn't have much to do. Estevez said, most programs are slowing down, but we are still continuing to build programs. The club went from 8 people to 50. I was able to go online to recruit in high schools and recruited on campus in a grassroots way. So if we can do that in COVID, watch out when it clears up. While Estevez is more vocal, it is Shaner who is the coach of the DAC team, and that is something he has worked on for years. For a long time, I had a lot of passion for competitive esports, Shaner said. I was coaching and helping people play better, and that is something I wanted to do for a long time in my free time. We brainstorm ideas to help the club expand and teams to go far beyond what we have now with one room and multiple teams. We take the nuts and bolts and we keep expanding. We are building individual teams and getting kids to learn the games. We are giving them the tools to coach themselves, and if all things go well, everything should evolve into something bigger. Estevez said the lab is important for not just gaming. DAC students Michael Guido Estevez left and Colin Shaver are shown in a picture at the gaming lab. But it's also a way to keep students on campus. We offer the campus environment, something you can do after class. It has saved kids from dropping out because you leave class, you have a couple of hours to kill, but some people go home and never come back. Estevez said here you can come in and practice. The lab is for competition, but people can still practice and keeps them on. Players have to have grades and do game tapes like every other athlete does. The team will play games like League of Legends, Overwatch, Smash Brothers, and Hearthstone this year, but another game, NBA 2K, may open up another opportunity around the time of the NJCAA Division II basketball tournament. We are actually hosting an esports NBA 2K NJCAA national tournament alongside the NJCAA Division II tournament. Estevez said we are hoping to make DAC a Midwest hub for competition. We have the facilities and access to the production department. which means we're going to stream our own TV shows. So I think we have a lot to offer. For both students, the chance to be part of building something nationally from the lab at DAC is a challenge they are more than ready to take. Esteva said it's exciting to be on the ground floor of something, and there are many advantages from being on the team, such as scholarships for team captains. We're not trying to make professional gamers, he said. We are using something that they are passionate about to keep them in school and get them through school. It's not about winning. If we lose every match but have a lot of people graduate, then that is a win for me. And now we'll turn to reading some death notices. The first is for Harry H. Hoagland, who died Friday, November 6th, and arrangements are pending at Sunset's Covington Chapel in Covington. From Georgetown, Jerry R. Stevenson, 86, passed away at 7 a.m. Thursday, November 5th at Pleasant Meadows Nursing Home in Chrisman. Arrangements are pending at Robinson Chapel in Catlin. And out of Hoopston, Antonio Tony Montez, Sr., 81, passed away at 6:20 p.m. Saturday, October 31st at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A private family service will be held at a later date. And out of Vetersburg, Indiana, Robert Bob McLean, 89, passed away at 11:25 a.m. on Thursday, November 5th at his residence. Visitation was held November 8th at the Masonic service, and the service time would be at the First Christian Church at 4 p.m. Burial, Osborne Prairie Cemetery. Our next article is entitled New Edition Community Foundation Awards $30,000 for Fairgrounds Project for the Commercial News. The Western Indiana Community Foundation is pleased to announce its awarding of a $30,000 grant to the Fountain County Fairgrounds Capital Improvement Project. Sherry Krug of the Friends of the Fountain County Fairground says, "We are excited about this generous donation by the Community Foundation. We have now raised $140,000 toward our $155,000 goal. Our plans include a new concession stand and kitchen, restrooms and multi-purpose room with Wi-Fi access and air conditioning. This new ADA-compliant addition will be a great improvement to the current facilities and is key for creating a welcoming and inviting area for our community. The fairgrounds hosts a variety of events, such as weddings, dances, Cub Scout events, auctions, open livestock shows, community events for local groups, and the yearly 4-H fair and 4-H meetings, according to a press release issued by Western Indiana Community Foundation. On a typical year, the fairground averages between 1 to 3 events and meetings per month from March through November, closed during the winter months. Attendance ranges from small group meetings, 10 to 20 people, to larger events, when attendance is upwards of 500 people or more. Meeting room space at the fairgrounds is currently limited to the large building at the south end of the fairgrounds. This building is expensive to heat and cool for smaller meetings. The planned multi-purpose room will be more economical for small meetings and will have Wi-Fi access. We hope that this county's centralized meeting space provides opportunities for growth, especially in youth and adult educational programs and hosting local small businesses meetings and events. The current concession stand is outdated and does not provide a safe food prep area. It is used extensively by the 4-H junior leaders during the fair, providing valuable life experiences in management and finances as they operate a food stand during the fair. There are 364 youth currently enrolled in 4-H who extensively use the fairgrounds during the fair and throughout the year for 4-H club meetings. According to Dale White, CEO of the Western Indiana Community Project, it's been a pleasure to partner with the Friends of the Fountain County Fairgrounds organization. The Attica, Covington, and Southeast Fountain Community Foundations are each awarding $10,000 to this worthwhile project. The community foundations liked the idea of an organization providing a centralized space to accommodate high-quality programs, both for youth and adults. In Fountain County, improving the fairground facilities will benefit all residents of the county, as well as future generations. The multipurpose room included in this project will bring flexibility and options for groups seeking a meeting place, and the concession stand and kitchen is a well-thought-out component of the project. White closes by stating, "We have enjoyed working with the Friends of the Fountain County Fairgrounds the past few years in their fundraising efforts. We are confident they will reach their goal of $155,000, and hopefully most of that will be done by generous Fountain County citizens by year-end 2020. The Community Foundation also likes the group's vision of exceeding their goal to have enough money to add some extra touches to the project, and to be able to put some money away for the long-term upkeep and maintenance of the new facility. It would be remarkable if our citizens and businesses could help them raise $175,000 to $200,000. Donations to the project may be made to Western Indiana Community Foundation, Attention Fountain County Fairgrounds Capital Improvement Project, Post Office Box 175, Covington, Indiana, 47932, or online at www.wicf.inc.org. Our next article is entitled Romney, Trump's Election Fraud Claim is Wrong and Reckless, from the Associated Press, Washington. Key Republican lawmakers, including 2012 presidential nominee Mitt Romney, on Friday slammed President Donald Trump's unsubstantiated claim that Democrats are trying to steal the election. But some GOP leaders struck a more neutral tone, and others urged the White House to fight. Romney, now a senator from Utah, said Trump was within his rights to request recounts and calls for investigations where evidence of irregularities exists. But Trump is wrong to say the election was rigged, corrupt, and stolen. That's what Romney said on Twitter. Trump's claim damages the cause of freedom here and around the world, and recklessly inflames destructive and dangerous passions, he said. Romney is Trump's most vocal critic within the Republican Party, and voted to convict Trump in the president's impeachment trial earlier this year. His comments came as GOP Senator Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, whose state is a key battleground in the presidential election, where votes are still being counted, called Trump's claim of fraud very disturbing. "There's simply no evidence anyone has shown me of any widespread corruption or fraud," Toomey told CBS this morning. "The president's speech last night was very disturbing to me because he made very, very serious allegations without any evidence to support it," said Toomey. "While he voted for Trump, I want the next president to be the person who legitimately wins the Electoral College, and I will accept whoever that is," Toomey said. Missouri Senator Roy Blunt, a member of the GOP leadership, said Friday that Trump should turn this discussion over to his lawyers, adding that Trump campaign was making inconsistent arguments. "You can't stop the count in one state and decide you want the count to continue in another state. That might be how you'd like to see the system work, but that's not how the system works," Blunt said at the Capitol. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy took a more confrontational tone, insisting inaccurately that Trump won the election, even though officials in several states are still counting Americans' ballots. This has been Dee reading the Vermilion County News for November 9th. I hope you have a great day, and I look forward to reading with you again soon.